Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Now we continue our October series, A People's Guide to Power, Real Estate Edition. This is our contribution to the People's Guide to Power series. Our news team has begun, in conjunction with this year's elections in New York and New Jersey, what unbalanced power relationships make housing so unaffordable in greater New York, decade after decade, even as every New York mayor announces historic affordable housing programs, and every New Jersey governor comes with a plan to get property taxes under control. We're doing segments on these things throughout the month of October here on The Brian Lehrer Show, A People's Guide to Power, Real Estate Edition. During this first stretch of the series, we're going back in time for some of the roots of today's unaffordability. Senator Cory Booker recalls the housing discrimination that he grew up with in New Jersey in the 1960s.
This is an issue actually that's very deeply personal to me and one that really has defined my own personal history. I'd like to start by telling a story. When about 1969, just 1 year after the passage of the Fair Housing Act, there was a couple here in Washington, D.C., married with two boys, that decided to move to New Jersey. And in New Jersey, they encountered a lot of what was called a practice called real estate steering, where black couples were steered away from certain neighborhoods. They grew frustrated realizing that they were being steered away from white neighborhoods, and they sought the help of the Fair Housing Council. And they set up an elaborate sting operation where my parents would go look at a home, or this couple would go look at a home, and they would then be followed by a white couple. If the couple was told that the house was sold or not for sale, the white couple would then appear and find out if that was indeed true. And most often for this couple from Washington, D.C., yes, they would find out the house was still for sale.
Cory Booker on his own family's experience with housing discrimination. But in 1975 came the court ruling known as the Mount Laurel decision, which said any zoning ordinance that makes low or moderate income housing impossible to build is unconstitutional. Mount Laurel is enforced by the agency known as COA. There is no mistaking how Governor Christie thinks of this, as on his Ask the Governor radio show in 2011.
Mount Laurel decision is an abomination. And why I've been trying to get rid of COA. I have now gotten rid of COA as an operating entity. That's the first step. And now we have to get these laws reversed. And I've tried to work with the legislature and have twice gotten, I think, a very effective revision to the Fair Housing Act passed by the Senate. The Assembly has refused to move it and continued to go down this road of the Mount Laurel decision, which I think is a bad one.
The Mount Laurel decision came in 1975. Also around that time, property taxes were becoming a defining issue in Jersey politics, as in this report on the New Jersey Nightly News on October 3rd, 1976.
New Jersey's cities are caught in a vicious cycle. The high concentration of the poor and the elderly means a drain on city services. That means higher taxes, and higher taxes drive out the middle class. Everybody knows about the vicious cycle, but few people who run government try to do anything comprehensive about it. They're faced with two equally unmanageable alternatives, either to increase the number of people paying taxes or to decrease the number of people using city schools, public housing, and welfare. The State Economic Policy Council, a board that advises the governor and the legislature, released its recommendations today, suggesting that the state try both alternatives, encouraging zoning that will let lower-income people move to the suburbs, and getting suburban residents and state government to help pay more for the cities. The Economic Policy Council says suburban commuters don't pay for the roads they use to get into and out of the city, and that's not fair. The council says it's also unfair that city people pay the same electric rates as suburban residents when it's cheaper for the electric companies to supply cities. But the city's biggest problem is the property tax. It's just not enough nourishment for urban areas starving to death from lack of funds. The council recommends some kind of tax sharing with the suburbs and a much greater dole from the state to pay for things like public housing and welfare.
That report from the New Jersey Nightly News in 1976. But the opposite was happening. Suburbs were not contributing property taxes to New Jersey cities. In fact, since then, a long line of New Jersey governors have tried their hands at controlling property taxes for the suburbs one way or another to get them lower, sometimes through trying to get New Jersey's 600 municipalities and 600 school districts to consolidate services. Here's Governor Christy Whitman from her State of the State address in 1998. Her state income tax cut put more pressure on municipalities' local taxes, but she opposed forced consolidations of towns and school districts to reduce their costs.
As everyone knows, the cost of education is indeed the largest part of the property tax bill. Major property tax relief probably will not occur unless we find efficiencies in the way we operate our public school system, which brings me to a sensitive and difficult issue. Within the next several weeks, we will hear from the Regionalization Advisory Panel established as part of CEFA. This panel will call on the state to reduce the number of school districts and consolidate services among them. They believe that we need to take a good, hard look at whether maintaining more than 600 school districts is the best way to educate our children and the best way to use our educational dollars. In short, the panel would have us engage on a course that could eventually lead to forced regionalization of some school districts. We all recognize, from a policy standpoint, the enormous potential consolidation carries for reducing property taxes. But we also know that the people of this state treasure the high degree of local control they exercise over their neighborhood schools. I know where I stand on this issue. I have long opposed the forced regionalization of schools. Regionalization won't work if the people of New Jersey don't want it.
Republican Governor Christy Whitman in 1998. Here's Democratic Governor Jim McGreevy singing a different tune in his State of the State 5 years later.
Year after year, we've returned to this Capitol. We've talked about auto insurance. We've talked about education. We've talked about property taxes. At every turn, we've treated the symptoms, but not the root cause. But these are not separate nor distinct problems. They are a result of a chain reaction set off by uncontrolled development. For years, all over New Jersey, we thought if we built one more road, one more mall, one more housing development, our problems would be solved. The truth is, that is the problem.
Governor McGreevy in 2003. Governor Corzine then tried to cap property taxes at 4% and didn't have that much effect. Some towns just ignored him. Governor Christie went down to 2% and declared it a success in 2011 in a speech to the American Enterprise Institute conservative think tank.
I live in Mendham Township, New Jersey. It is a town of 5,000 people, and it's shaped in a horseshoe. Inside the horseshoe is Mendham Borough, New Jersey, another 5,000 people. When the township went to the borough to say, let's talk about consolidating our police forces, you would have thought that there was an uprising happening inside the town. If that gets imposed from Trenton, it will have no validity. And they'll fight it just for the sake of fighting it. It's part of New Jersey's character, as you know, from having been there. I want them to come to their own conclusion on it. Because if you want to control property taxes, that's one of the things you're going to have to consider. But I'm giving them the option. You've got a 2% cap. And the only way to violate that 2% cap is to go to the voters and get them to vote to exceed the 2% cap. In the current environment, I find that unlikely. And so they're going to have to make some hard choices. That's why I hope to force the consideration of shared services between towns where appropriate and consolidation of towns where they deem it appropriate.
Governor Christie in 2011. So has he licked the property tax issue enough that it is not the third rail of New Jersey politics this year in the race for governor between Democrat Phil Murphy and Republican Kim Guadagno? Let's talk about the history and present state of the property tax and Mount Laurel debates now with Rutgers professors Mark Pfeiffer and Ray Caprio, who together did a major study on the property tax issue. Professor Pfeiffer, Professor Caprio, thanks very much for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Good to be here, Brian. Thank you.
And whoever wants to answer first, what were you thinking as you heard that parade of governors struggling with property taxes? Why is it such a stubborn issue?
I'll go with the more things change, the more they stay the same. The package was terrific. It really highlighted the challenges that we face. And if we were looking at this 40 years earlier and going back 40 years from that time, if you looked at the press clippings of that day, you would have found very similar issues, and you could repeat that going back into the 1800s. This is not a new problem. We just haven't figured out how to solve it.
And Professor Caprio, where did the issue come from? Is it unique to New Jersey or a defining issue in many states around the country?
Well, in some ways, it really is kind of unique to New Jersey because, unlike most states, New Jersey was fully incorporated from very, very early on. And we ironically don't have a pattern of annexing unincorporated territory. It's been quite the opposite, suburbanization and deconcentration of governments. So we went from approximately 100 jurisdictions shortly after the country was founded to now 565 in all sorts of increments. So we've been with a pattern of fully incorporated land for now well over a century. And what has occurred is that municipalities have essentially adjusted to the socioeconomic mix they're serving. And the services that they provide, which generate costs, really are a function of this evolution of the local communities in the state. And that's a contributor. And it is, in some ways, a little bit different than many other states. And I'll just add one more thing and ask Mark to kind of see if I missed any elements. New Jersey also is the most densely populated state in the country, some 40% more dense than number two. And so that also, the density itself, generates some diseconomies that have to be dealt with. And while it's easy to point to the property tax, the underlying issues are much, much more complex.
So this is something that people not from New Jersey kind of can't believe when they first hear it, that in a state that's this geographically small, despite all the people here, as reflected by the density, that's this geographically small, there are 565 different municipalities, was your number, and over 600 school districts. So, Professor Pfeiffer, how much do you see, let's not beat around the bush, segregation by race and class at the root of high property taxes? Poorer cities don't secede from richer suburbs very often, let's just say, but richer suburbs secede from poorer cities and even from poorer suburbs because they don't want to share the financial burdens regionally. Instead, they proclaim a principle they call home rule, like that's more democratic. Is that too harsh a view of it for you?
Yeah, I think that is a little bit too harsh, Brian, because, one, we haven't had the annexation and municipalities seceding from others for, well, over 100 years now. We've been pretty stable, and like Dr. Caprio said, we have been effectively completely subdivided into municipalities since the early 1800s. What we kept doing was kept subdividing as people wanted to create smaller municipalities and enclaves. And in many cases, those were racially motivated into the 1800s, into the late 1800s and early 1900s. So the Cory Booker story was pretty much spot on as far as a good deal of behavior that was going on. Today, however, I think our issue is the effect of it. Affordable housing goes beyond race. Race is clearly a part of it. But building affordable housing is expensive. Getting it built is challenging. Yes, there is resistance in a number of municipalities to have affordable housing built, and there's protests and people tie developers up. The loss of COA, which was a determination made by Governor Christie, is still technically the law of the state, And every municipality is responsible for providing its, quote, fair share of housing. And we now have the Supreme Court enforcing that. And it's not something that we've consistently done, but we keep doing these fits and starts and trying to improve things. It just, it's not been successful.
Anything to add, Professor Pfeiffer, Professor Caprio, because staying on the race and class question, maybe the town lines were drawn 100 years ago, but now this attempt by every governor to get consolidation, maybe voluntarily, it's resisted because you tell me why, but, you know, presumably, I don't know, you know, you get suburbs a little further out from Newark and then they don't want to consolidate with suburbs a little closer into Newark and start having to be somewhat responsible for the financing of urban problems and that kind of thing.
Well, I kind of agree with Mark that if you look at the motivation today, it's less not wanting to consolidate because of racial ethnicity issues. Although I would be completely in agreement that I would say probably in the period the 60s through maybe the 90s, behavior and all sorts of other stuff clearly were at play in terms of directing the real estate market. But we're beginning to see with the resurgence of the older cities, Jersey City, Newark, as two very good examples, economic recovery, which really is key, not only to solving some of the social issues in a state, but also the property tax issue. Without a robust economy, which the state has suffered from probably now for close to a decade, you're not going to get the kind of revenue generation necessary to begin addressing the issues of social equity. For example, our study on cost per capita was led to really a conclusion that is at one and the same time obvious, but maybe not so obvious, that the two classifications of municipalities that had the highest cost per municipal government were, on the one hand, very rich communities who were happy to pay what they wanted to pay in order to get what they wanted. And then the very poor communities, because they had heterogeneous populations that required multiplicity of services and an inability to generate the kind of resources to do that. And some of those differences in race, in income, in age, are really much larger regional issues.
So last thing, as we run out of time, how successful has Mount Laurel been, the Mount Laurel decision, at accomplishing the plaintiffs' or the court's goals? Are all the municipalities in New Jersey allowing for the development of some low and moderate income housing?
I think we have, that most municipalities have some, but arguably many have not provided their, what the courts have on and off defined as fair share. We're not there yet. I don't think that some of the proposals, such as consolidation, are the answers to those things. Funding is a critical issue involved in that, and we clearly have ways to go on it, but it's not the core problem that it used to be. I think that's important. A lot of those behaviors that Senator Booker talked about, they're behind us. Maybe some of the problems are
the overt housing discrimination that he talked about.
That's pretty much gone. I think we probably have issues where people don't want changes in their municipalities. They are concerned. It may be race-based. It may be income-based. It may be just people who are different than the folks who are there now.
So how do you see either the Mount Laurel fair share of low and moderate income housing issue or the property tax issue as issues in this year's gubernatorial race between Murphy and Guadagno? Is it different than the past?
I would opine that the impact as a major factor is going to be less than it was in the past, because I think we're looking at other major issues that make it, divert from it. For example, the issue of the pensions and public employees are out there. The history and the current standing in public's opinion of our current governor. All of this, I think, are going to kind of redirect from the emotion of the property tax. Now, that's not to say the property tax is not a problem, and there needs to be some way to address it. But we have historically tried to look at it as one or two things being able to fix everything, which is not possible.
Professor Ray Caprio, Professor Mark Pfeiffer from Rutgers, thank you both so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.